Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Peter Kwong, who is a professor of Asian American Studies at Hunter College, as well as professor of sociology at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. He is best known for his work on Chinese Americans and on modern Chinese politics. His latest books are Chinese America, The Untold Story of America's Oldest New Community, Forbidden Workers, Chinese Illegal Immigrants and American Labor, and Chinatown, New York Labor and Politics, 1930 to 1950. Peter Kwong is a regular contributor to The Nation, where he has an article, Why China's Corruption Won't Stop. Welcome to Background Briefing, Peter Kwong.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
And I'm fascinated by your article, Peter, because it ties together one of the seminal events in modern Chinese history, and that is the Tiananmen Square massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the first reformer who warned against corruption some 25 years ago was the Communist Party General Secretary Hu Yaobang, who the students on his death gathered in Tiananmen to mourn this leader who they obviously had a tremendous affection for. But his exposure of corruption and his call for rooting out corruption apparently angered the elite, including Deng Xiaoping, and that led to his downfall. And his subsequent death and the grieving in Tiananmen Square, of course, led to the bloody incident that we're all too familiar with. So this seems to be in the DNA of the Communist Party of China.
That's right. So what had happened at that time was that even before that, whether you liked Chairman Mao or not, one of the issues about Cultural Revolution was the decay of the Communist Party. So we could even go back further backwards. So in a sense, that a one-party rule does facilitate the possibility of corruption because there's no supervision above them. So corruption has always been an issue in Chinese Communist Party history, although the extent of corruption is never as bad as what is going on right now.
Well, that's what you reveal in your article, Why China's Corruption Won't Stop, the extraordinary scale of the corruption. We were familiar with the Bloomberg and the New York Times reports on former Premier Wen Jiabao's vast fortune of $2.7 billion, the Boji Lai case, of course, where the wife hired a hitman to murder a British businessman who was laundering at least $1.2 billion of their money. But the extraordinary amounts of money and the percentages of the control of the economy by the party and by the next generation, the princelings, is just extraordinary. There are 251 billionaires in the country today compared to only 15, 6 years ago. So the money is being accumulated by the elite, but it's also bleeding out, isn't it?
That's right. So I think what's important, people talk about corruption in a very general sense, you know, people taking money. But what's going on in China, as well as in Russia, is that a very, very strategic, systematic robbing of people's money, that is done by the fact that they take over state-owned industry, put themselves as members of the board of directors, and controlling all the major strategic industries and natural resources. So they are basically working as government official, but at the same time controlling billions of dollars worth of wealth of the Chinese people. So the temptation is such that the people on top is doing that, so is on the local level. So the degree of corruption is so large that the decadence of the party and the lack of discipline is such that even members themselves realize this is not sustainable. And many of the top officials, in fact, almost all the top officials have relatives outside the United States. Many of them put their money account outside the country. Well, Bo Xilai's case revealed that his wife's trying to launder money, a large amount of fortune, to the United States and to Canada, to Australia. And people who are familiar with this, you will find a lot of very, very wealthy princelings, in other words, relatives of top government officials, are doing that, living in the United States, owning property in the United States, or Canada, Australia.
Well, and they're called naked officials in Chinese, right?
That's right. Naked officials, basically, they have all their family members settled outside of China, and all their money already settled outside of China as well, but they remain in China themselves and holding on their official positions. But they are ready in case anything happens, they could escape. So, in a sense, they're naked because they don't have family and their wealth that's remain in China.
Sure, but they've already parked up to $120 billion abroad.
That's right.
So, again, I'm speaking with Peter Kwong, who is a professor of Asian American Studies at Hunter College, as well as professor of sociology at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. He is best known for his work on Chinese Americans and on modern Chinese politics, and he has an article at The Nation, Why China's Corruption Won't Stop. Now, just to give our audience an idea of the scope of what we're talking about, less than half of 1%, 0.04%, of China's families own over 70% of its wealth. And in the National People's Congress, the top 70 members of this body are worth $89.8 billion. In contrast, the worth of all 535 members of the U.S. Congress, the president, his cabinet, and the nine Supreme Court justices is only $7.5 billion. So that's an astounding fact.
Well, what's interesting is that for the Communist Party previously, that you can't be a party member if you are not a party official. But of course, Jiang Zemin, the party secretary earlier, introduce a new term called the full representative, mainly classifying capitalists as a productive force in the Chinese economy. Therefore, they are eligible to become party members. Now, that's why you have so many party members are actually CEOs and capitalists and own tremendous amount of wealth. So this is putting Communist Party upside down. From the time we talk about is Communist Party representing the vanguard of the working class, now it's exactly the opposite.
But meanwhile, Chinese citizens can't find safe milk for their children and they can't breathe clean air.
Exactly.
Because of these corrupt and uncaring officials and leaders.
Right. So, in other words, when you have these merchants, unscrupulous merchants and companies that is able to pay off government officials, then sanction, control, supervision, and law becomes ineffective. So that's why you have all these grievous, I mean, kids cannot trust their milk in the market, and yet this has not been able to stop. The kind of pollution, it's all connected to the fact that the officials is unwilling to enforce the laws, the laws in China. And that's, again, because the party officials is being bribed. And is it to their self-interest to let these abuses go on?
Well, apparently this is pervasive throughout the entire structure of the Communist Party, not just the guys at the top and their families, the princelings, who are basically set up to continue a dynastic rule. Most of the princelings are on these key committees in the Communist Party.
Right.
So it is a sort of dynastic system.
That's right.
You've got some, you know, examples of officials wearing expensive Swiss watches, et cetera. And in your article at The Nation, Why China's Corruption Won't Stop, Peter Kwong, you also have examples of a minor official who lost $12 million gambling in Macau. Of course, that's just making Sheldon Adelson even richer.
So, well, there's a very well-known novelist in China who became famous writing novels about bureaucrats. It's set satirical and it's also expose. But he says, you know, that the things that's happening on the ground is so bizarre, so outrageous, that he can't even imagine. No novelist could imagine the kind of things that are actually going on.
Well, there's a case of that you mentioned in your article of a minor bureaucratic official who had stashed away about $250 million from crooked real estate deals, because if you're a Communist Party official, you can confiscate farmers' lands and sell it to developers and this kind of stuff.
Right.
And he's defiant as he's charged, and he's saying, you think I'm corrupt? Yeah. But who isn't corrupt?
That's
can
right.
you tell me one person of my official level who isn't? China is a system in which corrupt officials promote corrupt officials. I don't have to tell you this, but do you have the guts to go after the really big ones?
Well, this is such a classic in a sense that he's saying exactly that's going on, and it's exactly everybody else knows. I mean, in a sense that fighting against corruption, every single leader coming in promised that, and eventually peter out, and nothing was done, and oh, have it goes on. So it is so institutionalized, deeply ingrained, that's why Chinese public are very, very angry. I mean, they can't speak up openly, but they use all kinds of ways to undermine, try to show their, for instance, you mentioned earlier, using videotape, that's official videotape of current events, the netizens try to focus on what kind of watches they wear and what brand would be and how much would that be. And that's one thing that I was so shocked, that people in the United States, watches are valuable, but the Chinese official is so focused as a status, as expression of power, they are willing to spend thousands, 20,000 gold and diamond watches, or get people to bribe them using watches. So this is a kind of a phenomenon that's quite unimaginable in our context.
So Peter Kwong, again, professor of Asian American Studies at Hunter College, he has an article at The Nation, Why China's Corruption Won't Stop. The new leader, Xi Jinping, he of course talked about the Chinese dream, obviously a reference to the American dream, and making
yes.
promises that they clean up corruption, etc. That's become a ritual. And a little bit of window dressing, instead of these 12-course banquets that they have, he's saying now we're going to just do four dishes and one soup. But the really scary part of this is the way that the Communist Party leadership and the Politburo sees what happened in Russia. It seems to me that they've sort of taken the right and the wrong message from it, on the sense that they've never allowed glasnost, but they've allowed perestroika.
Yes.
And they believe that if you let the people speak out freely, the whole system would collapse like it did in Russia. But apparently in private, talking to the Communist Party cadre, Xi Jinping is basically saying, you know, we're just going to get tough. We're going to hang in. So that's the mixed message. They tell the people they're going to clean up corruption, but they tell their own ranks that we're not going to bend one inch.
Yes. Well, this is one of the things I wrote this article, because I felt that just like in the United States, every time a new president, there is a sense, oh, maybe something will change, this honeymoon. And the Western press, as well as the Chinese press, Western press has been very timid about commenting, and somehow still have the idea that something might change. But this is a guy whose family has accumulated $1.7 billion at least now, and almost every single high-level party officials have that kind of wealth and connections. And to talk about anti-corruptions and even mention this idea of official banquets, you should have only four dishes and then a soup. That is so insulting, so disingenuous. So, you know, this is how the reality is from what he and many people in Chinese Communist Party talking about. It's not possible. This reform is not possible, and it will not happen. And he said it as much to his party members, that we cannot let this thing go. If we open up, just like Soviet Union in 1991, we'll be losing power. Mm-hmm. And so the main lessons to be remembered is we have to make sure we control the military. And so this is very, very different message from this whole PR about anti-corruption.
Well, just in closing, of course, the tragedy is that these one-party dictatorships don't develop a political opposition. And when they fall, as is the case of Libya and will be the case in Syria, the vacuum is just chaos and anarchy. And there's no opposition. But in terms of the people, what I find fascinating is that one of the more popular books in China now is the Chinese edition of Alexis de Tocqueville's 1956 study of the French Revolution, the old regime and the revolution, and that a lot of Chinese are discussing what's going on in China in terms of the French Revolution, which was inspired by the likes of Marie Antoinette and their excessive high living.
Exactly. This is so shocking that a book like this would be so popular, millions of people buying this book, and moreover, one of the leading party members who's in charge, the headman in charge of anti-corruption, Mr. Wang, made a comment. He says, you know, this is a good book. However, the book shows you that reform takes time. On the other hand, if you have a revolution, there will be many, many negative consequences. Well, that's exactly what the Chinese Communist Party people have been telling the Chinese people. That is to say, look, don't stir up the situation. If we collapse, China will be in chaos, anarchy. Well, so that's one way to discourage dissident liberals to say, well, you know, we want to make change. So this is kind of logic to try to stall revolution. Now, unfortunately, these are the things you can't stop. If you don't reform, things get worse, which is the case. People are coming up. And yes, one of the worst possibilities, however, is that they have strangled, they have taken out all the dissidents, all the political leaders over the years. That is, in fact, that they have sucked out the civil society such there's no space for leadership training to happen. So, in fact, if it collapsed today, China will be in chaos. And that's a very, very possible outcome. So, but this is not the only, as you mentioned earlier, in Egypt, you have this kind of situation. So the situation of the Chinese people is not enviable in the sense that they want to make change. If they do finally bring about change, the possibility is that there is no seasoned, trained people to take over from the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, Peter Kwong, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
You're very welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Peter Kwong, who's a professor of Asian American Studies at Hunter College, as well as a professor of sociology at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. He's best known for his work on Chinese Americans and on modern Chinese politics, and his latest books are Chinese America, The Untold Story of America's Oldest New Community, Forbidden Workers, Chinese Illegal Immigrants, and American Labor, and Chinatown, New York, Labor and Politics, 1930 to 1950. Peter Kwong is a regular contributor to The Nation, where he has an article, Why China's Corruption Won't Stop. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back talking about how the German economy, which is holding up the euro, is close to stagnation.